what do I know that's different? And I'm like, well, we already owned real estate at that in 2019. We started in December 2014. And I'm like, well, man, we've had so many repairs. We've done so many rehabs. I have all this knowledge. I've managed all these properties. I'm like, I'll just relate it. And I'll say, this is what a homeowner should look for when they're buying a house. You know, I talk about gutter downspouts, leaking basements, how to fix that, what to look for.
Hello, hello, hello. Another episode of the Real Estate Law Podcast. Jason Muth here with Pride Away Stays and Straightforward Short-Term Rentals. Rory, I'm super excited to talk with our guest today. I love his Instagram profile. His videos are off the chart. They're so easy to follow. They're super helpful. There's a lot of like just content on the internet these days. And I think that our guest, Grant Warrington, actually produces a lot of the good stuff. And his profile is great. It says, bought apartments, quit my job, changed my life. Really simple. Rory, that should be something we should aspire to, right?
It should be. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to break it down a little bit longer and fill up the podcast format with Grant. But I'm excited to have him break it down for us and to realize that dream for a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, man, we're going to learn what it's like to, you know, be producing all this content, be a contributor to Bigger Pockets. Grant just had Grant Cardone. He just interviewed him on another podcast. So without further ado, Mr. Warrington, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. I love chatting with you guys. We just had a great conversation offline. So thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. And, you know, like one thing I should say, you know, we've hosted a lot of these episodes before. You know, Grant, you're probably episode 160 or something. I don't know the exact number, 165 maybe. But, you know, I'm asking questions about your setup. Like, you know, I saw you actually posted a setup on your Instagram. And I just told you that I took a screenshot of it because I said, all right, I got to get lights like that. And I said, are you using a professional camera? Because I could tell it's a lot clearer than what we're doing on our webcams. And sure enough, you are. Like, you know, this guy's the real deal. He knows what it's like to record content. He knows what it's like to leave a job also and to become an actual real estate investor and add value to the rest of us who are also kind of looking to go do the same exact thing. I mean, I guess I did leave a job technically, and I'm an official real estate investor right now. But let's hear your story, Grant. Like, Grant comes to us from St. Petersburg, Florida, right?
Yep. Originally Detroit.
Originally Detroit. Oh, man, the Lions this year. Like, are you a Lions fan or a Bucks fan?
I am a Lions fan. I mean, you know, I have to be. But, you know, the whole time I'm down here, everybody's asking me, you know, everybody in St. Pete is like, hey, man, what do you think? And I'm like, I mean, it's been so long. It's like, you know, they got to go the whole way. And they didn't, which was unfortunate. It was great to see how far they went. But, man, they really need to go the whole way. So.
Yeah, the whole
enough country, on the Lions, I guess.
The whole country was pulling for the Lions. And I have a good friend in Detroit, and unfortunately, every time I bet on the Lions, like, they lost. So I kept telling him, I'm like, man, I bet on them again this week. He's like, why'd you do that? So tell us your story. Like, you know, how did you get started in this real estate space? And, you know, how did you work your way into being a contributor to Bigger Pockets and having such a influential presence online?
Yeah, I'll start with that. And first, just like you brought up, we were talking about lights and cameras, and I have this A6500 Sony camera, right? First, I had this, and that was it. It was my cell phone. So I want people, sometimes people put these, you know, they'll look at this and hear this and go, oh, I can't get started because I need to buy that camera first. I need these lighting. You know, scroll back on my Instagram. And man, you are going to see some bad videos. And I love that they're there because I go back and look at them and go, oh my gosh, it was horrible. My wife holding the phone, videoing me. And that's all I had. That's all I did. That's all I knew. That's where I started. So I don't want anybody to think that they need to go crazy, man. Just shoot a video and shoot another, you know, a video consistently every single day. That's what started really to change my life. And to the Bigger Pockets, what I was doing is 2 years ago, I told myself, I'm going to create reels and I'm going to post every single day. And I committed to that. And it was just me. I'd shoot the videos. I'd put the little text on the video and I would post it. And I'd post it to TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. And Bigger Pockets is where I started learning on podcasts. So I posted it in the Bigger Pockets groups. I'm like, now this will help people in there too. And eventually, I think it was after 6 months, Bigger Pockets reached out to me, and their head of marketing, and we jumped on a Zoom call, and he's like, dude, I love your videos. I love what you're doing. And, you know, I'm a huge Bigger Pockets fan. And he said, would you like to be a contributor? That way we'll use your videos on our Instagram page. And you know, if you want to collaborate two different things together. And I'm like, yeah, that'd be fantastic. I had maybe, I don't know, 20,000 followers or something back then. And, I was blown away that they asked me to do that. But that's where it started, just from that consistency, people noticing. And again, that's what led to Grant Cardone too. And I can get into that when we're ready to talk about that.
Let's stick on Bigger Pockets for a second. Rory, we've been fans of Bigger Pockets for almost a decade at this point, right?
I mean, longer than we've been investors. And there's a few years where we're just listening until finally we pulled the trigger. You know, even though I worked in the real estate space, it took us that number of years to really get inspired and get comfortable to do it ourselves.
Yeah. What surprises me about Bigger Pockets though is, like, you know, when we talk to people that are curious about our journey as well, right? Like friends and family, just like probably you have, Grant. And when we talk about Bigger Pockets, a lot of folks that are not in the real estate space have no idea what it is, right? And like, you know, that to not like they've done any Super Bowl commercials or national advertising or anything. It's the kind of thing that, like, if you're in the space, you'll find it and you probably know it. But if you're just getting involved, we've shown lots of people toward Bigger Pockets in the course of the many years that we've been, you know, fans of the brand. And, you know, I feel like it's our service to do that, because it's this great free community, if you want it to be, that has so much information, so much giving information. You know, Rory and I have spent countless long drives listening to their many podcasts. Just around the corner from where Rory is sitting right now, we bumped into Dave Meyer, you know, accosted him essentially, like at our neighbor's restaurant, New Kitchen in Newburyport. And, you know, a few weeks later, I went in for the hammer and invited him on the podcast. And sure enough, he came on and he was such a gracious guest. And then, you know, finally I made it to BPCon a couple of years ago in San Diego. Have you been to the conference, Grant?
No, I'm a member of GoBundance, and it's a men's group. They scheduled the GoBundance and the last BPCon. They scheduled those at the same time. So unfortunately, I could not go.
There's a lot of overlap between GoBundance and Bigger Pockets. That's really surprising to me. They would schedule on the same weekend.
It was to all of us as well, too, because there's a ton of GoBundance guys. David Green is in GoBundance. Mm-hmm. Brandon Turner is in GoBundance. Ryan Murdoch was. There's a ton of guys that are in. So it was a big surprise to us. I don't think that's going to happen again, because they did realize, like, oh, man, you know, this was scheduled at the same time.
Yeah. That's like the holy grail of content that was getting on Bigger Pockets. I mean, I certainly, you know, we'd love to get a little more connected to that brand as well. We've had a number of people connected to BP on this podcast. That's awesome. They reached out to you. I mean, like, it shows a testament to the consistency of the content you were putting out there, the quality of it as well. What made you say to yourself, okay, content is the way I should go? You know, when you probably made that transition from your full-time job into this, and you identified the fact that you need to have this presence online.
Yeah, I was a realtor. I had my license forever, right? And as I quit my jobs, it led me to, well, now what am I going to do? I always took a pay cut when I quit a job to get closer to full-time real estate. I was a business agent for my union. I was, I was a construction worker, a business agent. I had two pensions. I had a truck, a phone. I had everything going for me in that space, and I quit. And people don't quit that job. They get fired. They do not quit. And I did. And it was just crazy, but I kept doing that. Then I took a property management job. I managed over 800 units. I've done over 100 plus rehabs, and I quit that. And then I had my realtor license, and my wife's like, you know what, just be a realtor. And I'm like, all right, I'll do that. And I happened to meet with their marketing department, and they don't do any content themselves. This is 2019, so there wasn't a lot of realtors. I think back then, he's like, the statistics show 8% of realtors are shooting videos. You should be shooting videos online. And I was like, oh, okay. And my whole life, I've just done what people have told me to do. I didn't go to college. I'm not an engineer. I don't have all these things going for me. Nobody owned real estate. I don't have, we're a blue collar family. I'm a third generation crane operator, right? Construction worker. And this guy said, you should start shooting videos. It'll help you sell houses. Nobody else is doing it. And I was like, oh, well, that sucks. I don't want to do that. But all right, I guess I will. So I started doing that. And I thought, well, what do I know that's different? And I'm like, well, we already owned real estate at that in 2019. We started in December 2014. And I'm like, well, man, we've had so many repairs. We've done so many rehabs. I have all this knowledge. I've managed all these properties. I'm like, I'll just relate it. And I'll say, this is what a homeowner should look for when they're buying a house. You know, I talk about gutter downspouts, leaking basements, how to fix that, what to look for, like on your roof, all kinds of different things. And that just kind of worked for me. And that's where it started. I just started occasionally doing a video like that. And I thought I was doing a lot, but I really wasn't. But that's how it started, from that guy suggesting it.
Grant, I watched one of your videos today about a pipe behind a refrigerator, a water pipe that you recommended getting replaced from plastic to, you know, the braided one, the $15 one, whatever it was, that could prevent a flood. Yep. Our neighbor had a water filter underneath their sink that they installed that, sure enough, it burst and then it flooded. Granted, it's two different things, but, you know, that one little thing cost thousands of dollars worth of damage.
Yeah. And on that post, I think because I asked people, hey, if this has happened to you, let me know what happened and how much. And I think $350,000 worth of damage was the biggest one. That was so relatable because everyone has a refrigerator, right? And everyone has probably, if you have an ice maker, you have a water supply line that is plastic and you should switch it to braided metal. I think that's got almost 1.6 million views right now. So that for me was just like, wow, this video did really well.
Well, so my view was just, you know, just icing on that cake, right? You know,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
Rory, the lesson here is that we all have a lot of stuff in our heads, right? A lot of expertise, but not everybody takes that expertise and puts it on camera and puts it online and does it with consistency. Right.
I mean, it's amazing. Just think about what everybody knows in their professions, all the things that are stuck in their heads. And you can be either of two minds of it. You can either start to give it away for free, which I think is scary to a lot of professionals, you know, with the legal background. I think what we know is our trade. So I think a lot of people are afraid of putting it out there, giving it away for free, taking on liability if the advice is used incorrectly. So a lot of people kind of clam up and don't want to do it. And that's aside from just the camera shyness that people have of not wanting to put themselves out there. But everybody, no matter what your profession is, you're spending all day, every day in the weeds. You know a lot of things that are valuable to people. And you put yourself out there and you can be found.
I think a lot of attorneys feel like they don't want to put themselves out there because, you know, they're afraid of the repercussions of getting sued. I mean, part of the job of your profession, Rory, is not getting your clients sued, right? Protecting them and protecting their brand. But, you know, and not to say that, Grant, you're being reckless with the content you put out there, but, you know, have you had litigation put before you because of advice that you gave?
No, I have not. I basically tell my story too. So, you know what I mean? I tell people, this is what happened to me. This is how much it cost. This is how I fixed it. I try not to tell people you need to do this or should do this. And I'm sure I have in some videos, but a lot of it is the mistakes we've made over the past 10 years. And not even mistakes. It's just things that go wrong that you just can't plan for. And here's what happened. Here's how we resolved it. Here's what to look for. To try and avoid that. So a lot of my stuff is just like, hey, this could help you out.
Mm-hmm. Grant, let's talk a little bit about your personal investing, because I did see another one of your videos where it showed that you transitioned from single family house investing into apartment investing, and you had some kind of mental breakdown along the way. You know, that kind of was that moment. You know, so how are you invested now? And, you know, I know that you're teaching people how to invest in apartments, but, you know, let's talk a little bit about how you got to the state of your portfolio today.
Yeah, 2017, my wife actually did the math. We had 11 units and we were dumping. We never started with a lot of money. We actually ran out of money, didn't know how to grow. Met a guy, mentor, he showed us, hey, you need to do these portfolio loans. You need to get three houses free and clear, put them in a portfolio loan, commercial loan, you know, refinance them, and you'll get a check back, and then you move forward and you do those, you know, buy three more houses that need repairs, put tenants in, giant Burr methods, right? And buy rent, or buy rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. We get to 11 houses, and my wife's like, you know, our goal was $10,000 a month in cash flow, like probably everybody's when they start, right? And my wife's like, do you know that, because you have mortgages on everything, you know, people don't talk about a lot of this stuff too. That's what drives me crazy. Everybody thinks, you know, I'm going to buy two single family homes and I'm going to be rich and financially free. It's kind of what I thought. And we had 11, and we're like, my wife's like, you know, we make $100 or $200, $200 probably a month. And she's like, or $100, whatever it was. She's like, we need 50 homes, 50 to 100, depending on how much, you know, we cash flow a month. That's after everything's paid. We, you know, we, you know, maintenance, everything. Right. And I'm like, we had 11. I'm like, I can't do 39 more. I got to find 39 more deals. And I'm like, there's just no way I could do it. Rehab them. I was doing everything after work, you know, hiring contractors, you know, overseeing, I'm running around for materials. And I'm like, there's no way I can do it. So we said, you know what? That's it. Let's transition to apartment buildings. And we're done with single family homes. And the funny thing was, like, I think God will test you, right? Not God, but, you know, he's not testing you, but you know what I'm saying, right? Mm-hmm. Like the universe will test you, however it is. Right when we made that decision, I had one of our lenders reach out to me, and he's like, hey, if you want to buy a house, pick it out. I'm going to fund it all for you. And, you know, a single family home in this city, the city we're investing in, he's like, go ahead and buy one, and I'll fund it all for you. And I was like, man, to have somebody say that to me in 2014 when we started, I would have been so ecstatic, right? But I told him, I said, listen, we're moving in another direction. I appreciate that, but we're going to have to turn you down. We're only buying apartments now moving forward. And that was the first test, and that's what we did. It took 2 years of self-education, trying to learn about apartments. And in January 29th, 2019, we closed on our first building just about five years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was a 20 unit off market seller financing, big lift, but we got it done.
Is it in Florida?
No, Detroit area. That's where we live. We lived south of Detroit. I lived there my whole life. So we bought everything right in our backyard. And then we managed our own stuff too. So, right there.
If you could do it all over again, would you go the single family route to get started and then transition to apartments, or would you have found a way to jump straight into apartments?
I tell people start where you can. Right. I hate to tell people like, oh, you need to do this. Right. I have a course that teaches people how to level up to small apartment buildings. But I'm not the guy that's going to tell you, hey, you need to, I say, you know what, start where you can. We didn't have a lot of money. The other thing is start where you're comfortable, right? It's easier to get comfortable in single family homes. And if you can start there, start with a lower barrier to entry. It's a little easier to make mistakes at that point. But after that, what I like, I just like to be honest and tell people, like, most investors have leveled up that you watch. Most investors have leveled up to apartment buildings. They just forgot to tell you. That's what I tell people. Everybody you're watching, they've leveled up, right? And unless they have a big property management company or something. But that's the thing I like people to know is, you know, you shouldn't stay there. You should, if that's where you need to start, that's great. Start there, but then level up to some point, right? You should always keep leveling up your portfolio, in my opinion. Unless you only want a few houses, then there you go. You're great. That's all you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, our portfolio, we have five short-term rentals and a commercial condo currently. And our version of leveling up this year is we're, you know, launching short-term rental co-hosting in one of our markets. My mindset there was, you know, we were kind of uniquely qualified in one of them to do this. So we're going to see if that gets off the ground, hopefully a year later from this recording, it'll be off and rolling. And if it's not, then we're going to move on to something else. But, you know, a lot of people in the mastermind group that I'm in, which is Short-Term Rental Secrets, have leveled up toward boutique hotels. Like, that's the talk of the town for all the people in the STR space. And apartments is the level up, you know, for the people that are buying the short-term rent, the single-family houses, yep, or the multis, you know, like, you know, duplex, triplex, whatever it is. And you bring up a really great point about leveling up. And something that Rory and I probably haven't invested a ton of time really thinking through ourselves, because we've reached a level of comfort with what we're doing and what we have. But it does require a little bit of retraining your brain and thinking a little differently, both mindset wise and actual practicality. How were you able to make that transition, Grant? And what do you recommend to people that are at that stage in the portfolio that they need to level up?
What I did was I found a mentor. I went out and networked. We didn't know how to grow our single family portfolio. Found a mentor. I went to a real estate meetup, and there's this young kid sitting there, and there's about 10 people that are in their like 50s and 60s standing around him as he's sitting there with the hoodie on, you know, just chilling. And they all wanted his time. And I'm like, who is this kid? Right? Like, why are all these people want to talk to him? And he became my mentor, my friend, and the mentor in the sense where when I had a question, when I did work, I would reach out to him. We didn't chit chat all the time. He didn't hold my hand. When I made progress and had a question, I reached out to him and he would help me. But I didn't bother him with, well, should I do this or that? I took action, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, I'm not going to waste this guy's time. He'd already owned apartment buildings. So I got to see that too. I got to see his level up. He was actually the one that I went to work for with the property management company. I became his director of operations. But that's what I did. I found somebody doing it and I learned from them. And that's been really valuable for me. And that's why I created that course, was because I'm like, I need to create something for people like me. Like, here's question number one. Here's big question number two. But there's 50 questions in between there, right? And normally they're just, you watch something or whatever, but you're like, yeah, but what about this? What about that? What about this? Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. I created something where it's, and then I put a coaching with it as well. I'm like, I want to create this for me. I don't care if nobody even joins it. Like, this is for me, that guy back there in 2017 who had to do it on his own. Yeah, I had a mentor, but nobody was holding my hand. And I'm like, I need to create it for me. So it's like holding other people's hand along the way.
So that's fascinating. Your mentor was decades your junior.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm 48. He's probably 40, 39 or 40, yeah. I think.
Decades, but younger. So. Yeah. Talk about that a little bit, because people, you know, I'm about your age also, Grant. Okay. And, you know, I worked for many decades in, you know, a W-2 job, you know, work for, you know, big national, international companies and whatnot. A lot of people, mm-hmm, listening to this podcast are doing the same thing, looking to make that transition away from it, have that second chapter in their life, which maybe involves real estate toward financial and time freedom. When we go to those meetups and we see that dude in the hoodie, who is 25, 30 years old or so, who's already kind of run down this road doing it, what does it take for that older person to approach the younger person with that level of experience and mentorship? Like, do you find it to be difficult for you and the people that you network with to be able to say, hey, listen, I realize you're a lot younger than me, but I need your help?
Not at all. No, I've never had that problem. And now, you know, like being in GoBundance, there's guys that are 32 and they're just rock stars and just give. So to me, I'm around that all the time. Now I feel like I'm 32, but the funny thing is that people need to realize all the younger investors want to be older, because they say it'd be so much easier if I was 48 years old to do this, right? People would take me serious. I'd be more well-established. And all the older investors want to be younger. It'd be so much easier if I was 25. I'd have all this drive. I would make it happen. You never feel like you're in the right season, right? And it's the same thing with investing. I have people tell me, you know, well, now's not a good time to buy real estate. Well, listen, my mentor started buying real estate in 2010, but really nobody in 2010 was saying it was a good time. It was still scary, right? Because you didn't know if that was going to appreciate, if the market back then, you didn't really know if it was going to come back. There's never really, looking back in hindsight, you're like, okay, that was a great time to buy. But the best time to buy real estate is last year, always. And that's what I like to tell people. Like, even in 2025, people are going to say, damn it, I should have bought in 2024. It was the best time. You'll never be in, I've never had anybody say, man, this is the absolute best time to buy real estate. I've never heard that. Everybody always says, this sucks. Even in 2017, I was paying, people would tell me, I was paying $35,000 for that house you're buying for 70 right now. You're overpaying. And I was like, oh shit. Man, am I making a mistake? Right. And I had one guy tell me, I'm going to wait for the crash again before I buy a house. I'm going to buy that house for $35,000 again. There's going to be another crash. And the house I bought for 70 sold for $175,000, right? Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago when we got out of it. So I'm like, I think about that and I'm like, that guy probably never bought another house. You know what I mean? How sad. And here we are now financially free, now living in Florida, because we just said, well, you know what? We're going to stick to the numbers. We're going to stick to what we've been doing. It makes sense. We're just going to move forward and just roll with the market.
Yeah. Rory, we haven't seen that crash yet, you know, not to be too prognosticating, but you know, what Grant is mentioning, you know, where the best time to buy real estate is last year. I always say the best time to buy it is today. You know, yesterday was the second best day to buy it, right? And, you know, it depends on the rest of your portfolio. You know, I have friends that are buying their first, you know, rental or short-term rental right now, kind of getting into the space just like we did, where we bought another house. We didn't know how we're going to make ends meet with that second property. We wanted to use it ourselves. That's how a lot of people kind of get into the short-term rental space, at least. And then, you know, you look back 5 years later and you say, wow, what a great investment. Like, it kind of has always happened, right, Rory, for the past, at least the past decade.
I mean, it has, but you know, the nature of it changes a little bit. The feel of it changes a little bit year to year. Maybe the exact advice on what to buy and how to buy changes. But one thing that I believe that is that people, when they buy that first property, they should be able to endure some losses or just break even. And if the property doesn't do that, you don't want to be holding onto something that's going to cash flow negatively out of the gate, because you're going to put yourself in such a difficult position in your personal finances, and then it's going to prevent you from scaling up later on. So, you know, that it's a challenge, I think, in the market where we have now with tight inventory, high interest rates, and all of that. But if you look around and you find that property that can at least break even, go with it, and you know, you're likely to have success over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Grant, I'm going to put you on the spot right here. Like, talk about like three things that people that are buying single family homes right now should consider if they're switching over into larger apartments. Like, what are three big benefits to doing that?
Well, first, the economies of scale, right? If, you know, think about, we own the eight unit building we own, right? We bought that with one purchase. Our whole portfolio, 41 units, was four purchases. In single families, you have to find eight deals. And with that eight unit, you have to find one. So the economies of scale is great. The other thing is everything's under one roof, right? So say you're doing maintenance or rehabs or whatever you're doing. Like, I can have Lowe's delivering product in unit two, my maintenance guys in unit four, and you know, working on something, and then we're rehabbing unit eight, right? It's all under one unit, and it's just much easier to control. They're all the same thing. They're all identical. So once our maintenance man has done one or two, he can go in there. He knows how we turn them. It's all the same. We use the same light fixtures, countertops, paint scheme, flooring. It's all the same. So that's what I love too. Everything's cookie cutter. It's so much easier. Then you get into things like, the appreciation, right? You can force the appreciation because it's valued on a cap rate. So if I raised rents by $100, like that eight unit we bought, we raised rents 2 months after purchase by $100 a unit, and we added like $100,000 in value to it based off the cap rate, right? So it's just incredible what you can do there. The depreciation, right? We don't, we have so much depreciation that we don't pay tax, right? And I want to be clear, we probably pay $50,000 in property taxes a year. So we pay taxes, but it's the income tax. And that's what, you know, when you hear people say, oh, rich people don't pay taxes. That's not true. It's this is available to anybody. That the tax code's available to anyone out there listening to this, right? It's just you have to do things in order to take advantage of it. So when I was a construction worker, I didn't own real estate. I couldn't take advantage of that tax advantage. But now that I own real estate, I can. And I'm a real estate professional. And so we pay zero in taxes. The other thing, we get owner draws, which are tax-free. There's just so many different benefits that it's just incredible. Once you start owning these properties, it's like you're playing at a different level, right? We took those three single family houses, and just like Monopoly, right? You guys, people have heard the 1031 exchange, right? So we took our three single family homes, we 1031, that means we deferred paying capital gains, and we took all of our profits and put it into buying that 8-unit property. And it's just incredible. It's just really incredible. And then one day we're going to take that 8-unit and sell that, and we're going to roll that into to another 1031 and buy a bigger property. So it's just really incredible what you can do with apartments.
The tax codes certainly are written in the favor of real estate investors, and they are the ultimate cheat code that people outside of this space don't understand. Once you get in the space, you don't even know that taxes and the tax code is working in your favor. And then there's something that will click along the way. I had that moment of clarity actually at BPCon in San Diego, where it hit me and I was like, oh, I get this now, right? Okay, we were already in a situation where we were real estate professionals and we'd never done a cost segregation study. And then finally I told Rory, I'm like, Rory, we got to do one of these things. And like, we did it, and it was like mind-blowing. You literally feel like you're cheating the system, but instead you're actually following the system.
It's incredible. It really is. And people don't understand that in the single family space, right? Until, like you said, I was the same way, right? And you don't have to know all these things. You just get a good CPA, someone on your team that we started using the CPA my mentor uses, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, if he uses him, we're going to use him. And the CPA said, I'm pretty expensive. We were at 11 units back then. He's like, I'm pretty expensive. You could get this done cheaper. And we said, no, we want to start our relationship with you. And he's an expert. So that's what we went. And he's the one that has shed light on a lot of this for us.
I'll say that does say a lot. And it saves a lot of time to just go to the people that are being used by those who we trust. We do that a lot in my mastermind too. Like, we're always sharing not just ideas, but contractors and people who to use for this, that, and the other thing. And it's one less thing you have to worry about. You don't have to vet 10 different things, whatever that thing is. Let me ask you a quick question as we move toward our final questions. I want to ask about the human side of what you do, because we all on these podcasts, we all talk about the investment side of it, the money that we're making, the taxes we're saving, but you actually physically have families that are staying in your apartment buildings, right? How do you behave as a good landlord to these families? And what are some recommendations that you would have for people that want to get into the apartment space that need to think a little bit differently beyond the numbers?
Yeah, if you're going to self-manage it, it does get a little trickier. And I like to talk about this because, again, you're going to listen to a podcast and somebody's going to say, just like I did on a podcast, oh, we raised rents $100. Was it that easy? No, there were some conversations I had to have with people, and it was tough. Because what happens is when you buy an older building from a mom and pop landlord, chances are the rents are very low because they don't make repairs. And the tenants don't complain because they pay low rent, right? So when you come in, you're going to make repairs and you're going to raise the rent. Well, guess what happens when you raise the rent from $600 to, say, $900? They're pissed, okay? And it's a tough trade-off. But the problem is the building shouldn't be in that bad a condition. The landlord shouldn't have let it go that long. And the rent should not be that low. And the truth is, a tenant probably shouldn't be living there, because they couldn't afford, you know, if the rent was higher, they couldn't afford to live there. And it's, you just need to be aware of that and treat people fairly. What I tell people, we do what we say. I'm going to fix your place. I don't care if you're not paying rent, right? We had one lady that quit paying. If she had a repair, we're in there fixing it. Now we gave her over to the eviction process and did whatever. That was her decision not to pay. But we don't treat her any differently. We just don't interact with her unless she needs something, then we're more than happy to help. We're still very kind. Even when I would see her, I'd say, hello, how are you doing? I just always told myself, she's going to have to live this life for the rest of her life. She will be out of my life forever in 3 months. Her son vandalized our property, threatened my wife. It was tough for a little bit, but we just kept saying, they're going to have to live this life. They're going to continue. We will never see them again in 3 months or whatever it is. And you just have to remember that. But, you know, I tell people, you just treat people fairly, be nice to people, be honest. The other thing is you need to have rules in place and you need to enforce those. So if I let her slide for 2 months with no rent or she can't pay rent, right? Eventually, I'm not doing her any favors because eventually she's going to get evicted. I'm going to have to evict her, right? So we tell people when we buy a building, we want you to take care of the property and we want you to pay rent on time. And those are the biggest, the biggest question is, are you going to raise rent when we buy a building? And I always say, listen, this building's been neglected. Would you agree? Yes. The past landlord didn't do anything? No, he did not. Okay. We're going to fix all that. It takes time. We're going to work on the major things first, but I have to see how this building is functioning. If this building needs more money to function, we're going to have to raise rent. The building needs to function because it wasn't functioning properly because the rents were so low. But let me look at that and I'll get back to you. And that's what we tell people, but we fix the repairs, but we also expect them to pay on time and to take care of the property and not disrupt the other tenants too. If you have a, let's say in that eight unit, we had a lot of tenants that just did whatever they wanted. And it's hard to now rent to, let's say, a professional who has to get up in the early in the morning and whatever. And let's say the building smells like weed or cigarettes or, right. So it's hard to try to transition a building like that when you have tenants that really do not care. So that's something that we've gone through. We've transitioned to no smoking in our buildings now. No smoking of any kind. If you have a medical marijuana card, that's awesome. You can eat your edibles, but you cannot light anything up. Mm-hmm. And that's really helped us.
Yeah. People don't buy any assets, whether it's a large company that's publicly traded or a small business on Main Street or an apartment building. They don't buy it just to keep things the same. They just don't. Like the new owner has a different way to see it. They want to improve the building. They want to improve the asset. And improving is sometimes by laying people off and by streamlining expenses or by adding to the business like you're doing. But with that does come a cost, right? It comes, you're not going to just absorb the cost of buying a building and making all these changes and then having everything remain the same for the tenants. So, that could be some transition. So if you're listening to this, thinking about doing apartments, realize that that's going to be some of what you're going to have to do. And, we'll get into, the work that you're doing, Grant, in helping people buy apartments in just a second. I want to get to the final few questions that we ask all of our guests, and then we'll learn more about, your blueprint program. We ask these of all our guests that come on just to wrap the interview up and learn more about you. The first one of these questions, Grant, is if you can get on stage for half an hour and talk about any subject in the world with zero preparation, what would it be?
Social media. I love it. Yeah, I find more in that social media, digital marketing, things like that. I really get excited about that, and that would be it.
All right. Our social media expert, I'm coming to you for advice.
I love it.
Upper game this year. Second question, tell us something that happened early in your life or career that impacts the way that you're working today.
Two things, really. I started buying single family homes in 2002 when they were giving away mortgages, and I took three of them. I had no idea what I was doing, unprepared, and I drank back then. And I had to declare bankruptcy in 2007. I lost it, had to give those back. That changed my life because it taught me how to deal with tenants. No one paid me. Everyone owed me, like, I had three tenants. They owed me each $5,000. And it was a nightmare. And it taught me, you know what? I can still be firm and get the rules across. And it really taught me how to deal with a tenant. So that was huge. And then 2011, I quit drinking, and that changed my life. And that's where my life really started. So that was a huge impact on me.
Thank you for sharing that. Third question we have, tell us what you're listening to or watching or reading these days. Anything in the world?
I listen to a lot of Joe Rogan now. I listen to him when I work out, and I just really enjoy his perspective. I like the fact that he lets people talk, and you just learn a ton on there. Sure, he gives his opinion, but he doesn't fight with guests, even if he disagrees with people. So I that's important to me. I don't like to bring negativity. If you watch my stuff on Instagram, I don't engage. I don't want negativity. It's just not me on social media. So I like that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you want to talk about social media, you know, with the answer to your first question, and you do it really well, but you're not doing it in a controversial fashion, right? You're doing it in a useful way, in a giving way that anyone can basically benefit from that information and not feel like, you know, if they think differently politically from you, or if you're putting something controversial out there, you know, like, you know, screw all that stuff. Your content is evergreen and good for everybody, right?
Yeah. And that we never touched on the Grant Cardone.
Tell me about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have one more question, or was that?
No, that's it. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Tell us about Grant.
So again, that was just, you know, being intentional with my content, right? For the last 2 years, all of a sudden it was New Year's Eve, 2021, New Year's Eve, or I'm sorry, 2023. The last, you know, here recently. And I'm sitting there at my mother-in-law's, and I get a DM from Grant Cardone, and I'm like, yeah, what is this? And I'm like, well, wait, it's his account, 4.1 million followers. And it said, hey, I love what you're doing. And I responded, I said, hey, Uncle G, appreciate what you're doing, man. Keep changing the world. You know, keep doing big things. And he texted me back and said, hey, I'm putting together my podcast schedule for 2024. I'd like to be on your podcast. Email me here. And it was his assistant. And I was like, holy shit, this is real. You know? So the funny thing was, though, I don't have a podcast. So I reached out to my buddy, Jamie Gruber, who has the Tribe of Millionaires podcast with GoBundance. And I'm like, hey, man, do you want to do this with me? And he's like, hell yeah. So Jamie said, let's do it in person. And we reached out to Grant's team. We said, hey, listen, we'll come to Miami. And they said, yeah, that's fine. We'll shoot it in our studio. So we went to Miami, shot it inside Grant's studio. I brought another friend of mine who shot our B-roll, you know, our back-end video and pictures. And that's how we got to meet him. And it was pretty incredible. He follows me now on Instagram. He shares some of my stories I put up. And that was just all from, he just found my content, you know. So it's just pretty amazing. I am by far not the most successful guy he knows, right? But it was the content that attracted to him to me and then got me in the door, which for me just blows my mind that it's like, just start putting things out there and you don't know what's going to happen and how your life can change.
That is wild. Yeah. And that actually was him, not a virtual assistant, it was actually him. How do you think you could leverage that? I mean, not like you're looking at it saying I could make, you know, $10 million as a result, but you know, you mentioned you brought your team there for some B-roll. Mm-hmm. Like what's the overall plan to now have this Grant Cardone connection?
To tell you the truth, nothing. I don't have any intention. I don't have any, my whole thing is I know I'll meet him again, at some point in my life. But I always look at social capital. So now I'm friends with Ryan Pineda. If you know who Ryan Pineda is, right? Ryan Pineda knows who I am. I golfed with him. I paid $5,000 to go golf with him. I've gotten his programs, but he and I know who we are. I invited him on a podcast and I did a podcast with him. Now, Grant Cardone knows who I am, To me, that's social capital, which means you're not going to make money off it. You're not going to get paid from it. And I don't expect to, but I think it's more important in life that people know who you are when you're trying to do big things. So I really don't look at any, I use the B-roll, I'll use content and I'll use things like that and snippets, but I don't have any, master plan or anything like that, at all. When I meet people like that, I'm like, hey, that was cool. Hopefully I get to meet them again and, get to be around them a little more, and who knows, we'll see what happens, but nothing, I don't expect anything ever.
Rory, what an amazing, like, vantage point toward celebrity and influence, you know, that Grant's sharing with us.
I mean, I just enjoy just how organic all of this happens. If you're putting out, you know, a good product, good information, it can come around and it happens naturally.
Yeah. Now, Grant, you do have a program, Apartment Buying Blueprint. Is that right? I see it say over your left shoulder. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, again, that's just the, it's a course, and it teaches you from A to Z how to buy apartment buildings. And I also coach in that every 2 weeks. And we got awesome participation. I've had that up for a year now. We're doing really well. And again, I made it for people like me that are like, yeah, I want to jump to small apartments, but I don't really know how to do it. So, you know, there's accountability in there. I coach people through it. And I really built that for people like me who just need help and aren't really sure how to do it. I didn't know anybody that owned real estate in my life. So it was all new and I had to learn as I go.
Yeah. We've talked about coaching programs on this podcast. I'm in a coaching program myself. And, you know, just when you think you had all your education, I did go to a college. I did go to a good school. And I just said, hey, that's not all the education that I need. Like, I need new education in this field. And somebody else that we had recently on this podcast said that everybody needs a coach. Tom Brady needed a coach, right?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I think it's important that even people that are operating at a high level have a group of people, they have mentors, they have people that can bounce ideas off of, and they have coaches. The challenge is taking that step to say to yourself, yes, I need this. Yes, I'm willing to spend the money on it. And then yes, I'm willing to follow through with, you know, no pun intended, the blueprint for the work.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you're so right, because look, I spent, just to get in Ryan Pineda's world, I spent $5,000. Grant Cardone was free. He reached out to me to go see him. But I mean, again, to get around him, what would you spend? I've spent money every year on GoBundance. Last 3 years, I've spent probably $60,000 on coaching and all that. I have a call with my mindset coach tonight. Let's say 6 years ago, I was the guy watching YouTube. I was the guy like, I don't need a coach. I know what I'm doing. I don't need, any of this kind of stuff. Right. Well, one, because I really wasn't in a position to afford it. But if you're not there, then just keep it in mind that these are things that really are going to help you, because successful people have those things in their life. They have coaches, mentors, and people that help them grow. So, I mean, just it, no matter where people are at, that's something you should be striving for, to get some help and pay people for their time. You know,
also the people that are willing to pay others for their time, when they surround themselves with others who are also willing to pay for that same time, you kind of look at each other and you say, okay, we're all willing to invest this money. You know, so tell me about yourself. And next thing you know, you're around a tribe of the right people.
Yeah, 100%.
Grant, thank you so much for all your time on this podcast. Like, we could probably go on forever about this, and I can't wait to hear more about social media when we invite you back in the future. We're certainly watching what you're doing. We're going to have to emulate it ourselves. So we'll put all of the links in the show notes. I strongly encourage people to follow Grant on Instagram at the very least. And, you know, if you're interested in buying apartments and learning how to do it the right way, you know, he definitely has tons of information about that. But if you're not, it's entertaining content and it's super useful. I've already gotten some benefit from it myself.
Thanks. And it's at Grant Warrington.
At Grant Warrington. Yes, we will link everywhere. Again, link that up in the show notes. Very easy to find. Rory, where can people find information about you?
If you just go to rorygill.com, you'll see the different ways that you can get in touch with me and the different ways that I can help you out.
All right. If you've enjoyed this episode, really appreciate 5-star ratings. We love all your comments. And if you want to be a guest in the podcast, please go to realestatelawpodcast.com, fill out our form, reach out to us, and we'll see if it's the right fit. On behalf of Grant and Rory, thank you so much, everybody. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. We'll see you next time.